Well, let's go on into the 39th chapter. It's a relatively short chapter, only 8 verses. And we would like to finish it because this 40th verse makes a definite division in the book of Isaiah. I mean, the 40th chapter makes a division. At that time, now here again, at that time would have to mean about the time that Hezekiah had recovered from his sickness. Sometime after his recovery. At that time, Merodach Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and was recovered. Now this is an interesting little verse, due to the fact that for centuries, nobody had any inkling of an idea of who Merodach Baladan was. He was thought from the pages of history to have never existed because there was no record of him to be found. Another thing that's interesting about this is that all during this time, Babylon was a vassal state to Assyria. Now, Assyria was an enemy to Jerusalem, and so one of the states of Assyria certainly would not be sending a letter and presents and congratulations to Hezekiah upon his recovery from his sickness. And so it was a mystery for years and years, and critics and agnostics proclaimed this to be one of the fallacies of the Bible. But 100 years or so ago, they did discover a document that did show that there was a king by this name, Merodach Baladan, and the king Baladan, who was king of Babylon, and these people had usurped the authority, they'd usurped the power of the throne of Babylon, and they really at this time were at odds with Assyria. They had broken off relations with Assyria. They'd become a rebel. And for about a 6-month period there, they were in a rebellious state against Assyria. So this explains then why they would have been favorable to Hezekiah, and they would have wanted to send presents and encourage Hezekiah, because Hezekiah had repelled the Assyrian force, and so these were two countries sticking together at this time against a common enemy. And it was a common thing to send a present. When one king addressed another, they sent presents to him, and they sent these letters. For he'd heard that he'd been sick and was recovered. And Hezekiah was glad of them and showed them the house of his precious things, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious ointment, and all the house of his armor and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house nor in all his dominion that Hezekiah showed them not. Hezekiah was so pleased to see them that he just opened everything to them. He showed them every kind of a treasure that he had. There was nothing that he had that he didn't show them. And it is implied here that this was even to the point of boasting and going beyond what he was allowed to do. And it was looked upon as something wrong on the part of Hezekiah. And Isaiah was most unhappy with it. In verse 3, then came Isaiah the prophet unto King Hezekiah and said unto him, what said these men? And from whence came they unto thee? He asked Hezekiah, what do these men want? What did they say to you? Well, Hezekiah didn't answer that question. But the next question was, whence came they unto thee? And Hezekiah said, they are come from a far country unto me, even from Babylon. They've come a long way to see me. They've come from Babylon. And so, no doubt, he was trying to cover up his boasting and the showing of all of his possessions, cover that point up by implying that he was just being a good host. They come from such a long distance, he was just being hospitable to them. Then said he, what have they seen in thy house? And Hezekiah answered, all that is in my house have they seen. There is nothing among my treasure that I have not showed them. Then said Isaiah to Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord of hosts. Hezekiah, this is what the Lord thinks about this. Behold, the days come that all that is in thine house and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. Now here is a distinct prophecy about the captivity. And so Isaiah takes this opportunity that he is so boastful, in which Hezekiah has shown all these possessions to these ambassadors from Babylon. He takes this opportunity to show them that there's coming a time in which all this is going to be carried away into captivity, and the place is going to be Babylon. Now, the captivity was yet some 100 or 120 years from this time. It wouldn't be seen in Hezekiah's day, but it's a prophecy about it. Now, I'd like to pause here just for a moment and review a few passages of Scripture that give this prophecy about the captivity. And the significant thing is that of all the prophecies about the captivity up to this point, this is the first one that names the place. Up to now, nobody had said Babylon. It was only a far country or a land across the river, which would be the Euphrates. But nobody had said exactly what the country would be. But here, the country is definitely noted. In 2 Chronicles 36 and 18, and all the vessels of the house of God, great and small, and the treasure of the house of the Lord, and the treasure of the king, and of his princes, all these he brought to Babylon. Now that's not a prophecy, that's a story telling about it happening. So that just as Isaiah said they would all be taken, 2 Chronicles 36, 18 records that they did take all these things to Babylon. In Leviticus 26, 30 through 34, and I will destroy your high places and cut down your images and cast your carcasses upon the carcasses of your idols, and my soul shall abhor you, and I will make your cities waste, and I will bring your sanctuaries into desolation, and I will not smell the savor of your sweet odors, and I will bring the land unto desolation, and your enemies which dwell therein shall be astonished at it, and I will scatter you among the heathen, will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities waste. Then shall the land enjoy her Sabbaths as long as it lieth desolate, and ye shall be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy her Sabbaths. Now this is Moses telling them that if ye shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhor my judgments, so that you will not do my commandments, but that ye break my covenant, this I will do unto you. He says that back in the 15th verse. So that's a prophecy then about them being carried into the land of their enemies and being having their land left as a desolate land. Again in Deuteronomy 28, verses 64 through 67. And the Lord shall scatter thee among all people from the one end of the earth even unto the other. And there thou shalt serve other gods, which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, even wood and stone. And among these nations shalt thou find no ease, but shall the sole of thy foot have rest. Neither shall the sole of thy foot have rest. But the Lord shall give thee there a trembling heart, and failing of eyes, and sorrow of mind. And thy life shall hang in doubt before thee, and thou shalt fear day and night, and shall have none assurance of thy life. In the morning thou shalt say, Would God it were even, and at even thou shalt say, Would God it were morning. For the fear of thine heart wherewith thou shalt fear, and for the sight of thine eyes, which thou shalt see. So that's another prophecy that really has a reference to their being carried into captivity. Micah also tells about it. Amos also tells about it. So there were many prophecies about their being carried into captivity. But as we said, this is the first prophecy that names the place, and the place being Babylon. So in verse 7, and of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. So Hezekiah is told here that his own descendants, his very offspring, that he would have, which would be those of the household of the king, they're going to be taken away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Now the word eunuch here means a person who is the keeper of a harem. It has broader and more narrow meanings. In the most strict sense, a eunuch is a man that's been castrated, and then he's used to keep a harem. He is not a person who would have a wife or a family or anything of that nature. because the castration is supposed to remove all of his sexual desire. But a eunuch, the term, broad term of eunuch, doesn't necessarily have to mean that one is actually a eunuch in that sense, but it can just mean a high officer of the court. And it would have to be some kind of an officer high up in the position of government. But nevertheless, it could have been an actual literal eunuch in some cases. But as we read the story of Daniel, we know that Daniel did have a position of a lot of authority in the court of Babylon. In 2 Chronicles 32, I'd like to read another passage here. Verses 25 and 26. In those days Hezekiah was sick unto the death, and prayed unto the Lord, and he spake unto him, and he gave him a sign. But Hezekiah rendered not again according to the benefit done upon him, for his heart was lifted up. Therefore there was wrath upon him, and upon Judah and Jerusalem. Now this passage teaches that Hezekiah was not altogether pleasing with the Lord after he had recovered from this sickness. And this would have to be probably what he was talking about whenever these ambassadors came over from Babylon and he so boastfully showed them all of his possessions. For we read again in the 31st verse of this same chapter of 2 Chronicles 32, "Howbeit in the business of the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, who sent unto him to inquire of the wonder that was done in the land, God left him to try him, that he might know all that was in his heart." So these ambassadors coming and bringing him the present and bringing him the letters and wishing him every kind of success as a result of his recent sickness and recovery, it seemed to have kind of gone to Hezekiah's head. The Lord left him. He tried him. And it was displeasing to the Lord, as we see from what Isaiah has done. And so as a result of that, he punished Judea and Jerusalem. And a part of that punishment was this reinstatement of the prophecy that they would be carried into a foreign land, and this time the land was stated to be Babylon. Then said Hezekiah to Isaiah, "Good is the word of the Lord which thou hast spoken." In other words, Hezekiah took this prophecy the way that a man of God should take it, even though it didn't mean anything beneficial to him. He says, "Good is the word that thou hast spoken." He said, "Moreover, for there shall be peace and truth in my days." This captivity was going to be after the time of Hezekiah. He wouldn't experience it. He said there's going to be peace and truth in my days. And of course these two elements are the two elements that we should all strive for in our days, is peace and truth. Peace is that state of security and happiness and tranquility. And truth, of course, is that state in which we're doing what's right. And so Hezekiah took this prophecy in the best way that he could. He said, "It's good is the word of the Lord which thou hast spoken. And then there'll be peace and truth in my days." So we're going to close this chapter at that point. Does anybody have any questions or any comments on these two chapters? I've heard of them, saying that the time whenever the sun stood still, when Joshua held his hands up, and they went over into South America, the other side of the world, and they showed that there was an extended period of darkness there in their records to correspond with the extended period of light, you know, on the other side of the world. And I don't know how much truth there is to it, but I've heard people try to prove it, that it did actually happen. And it may be that, you know, that he did just cause the earth to stop rotating and or rotate backwards even, to make it go backwards 10 degrees. It didn't just stop, it went backwards. I don't know how long it was. 10 degrees to go backwards, it might have meant that it had to go the 10 degrees again, so it could have been 20, 24 hours. to move backwards 10 hours, of course, depending upon the time of the year, that could have been 10 long hours, equivalent to 12 hours, and then it had to go on forward again another 12 hours. That could have been 24 hours. It certainly could have been. No, I don't think it was the whole day in the case of Joshua, but I just say that there have been people who tried to prove that that actually happened from science. Well, this ends the historical portion of Isaiah, and in this 40th chapter and the rest of the book, we have then more of the prophecies that relate to the church and to the Messiah. And, of course, this is really what we think of more in Isaiah, are those type of prophecies. Although we spent all this time studying Isaiah up to this point, and we really are just now ready to get into that part that we think of as being more applicable to us today. Is there any further thing?
Would you like to comment on the 20th verse?
How about those stringed instruments? I thought maybe Luther wasn't paying too much attention to that. Well, all I can say is that there's no question about the fact in my mind that they did use instrumental instruments in their worship to the Lord during these days. The big question that comes to my mind, though, is was the Lord pleased with it? Amos implies very strongly that those who made instruments like David were not pleasing to the Lord, and that this might have been an adulteration of the true way God wanted the worship to be. I can't say. I do know this, that whatever they did then could not be done today unless we had authority to do it today in the church. We don't go to the temple like they did, and we don't have the incense, or the laver, the golden laver, the table of showbread, the candlestick, the altar that they kill those beasts and offer them on, nor do we have the Ark of the Covenant. You know, we don't have those things today, and so we wouldn't have whatever they had here that was called stringed instruments, whether it was pleasing or not pleasing.
I didn't ask the question because I believe stringed and worship.
Yeah. Well, if a person's going to take that, then they'll have to take everything that Hezekiah did then, and take it all. You know, he wouldn't have a right to go and pick that out and leave the rest. Take it all. He even had a temple that he did this in, and he went to the temple on the third day. And that's certainly not around today. But now my answer on that is, you know, just a very skim of the surface about how to sing praises to God. And that's not a total complete answer about instrumental music at all. Well, if there's nothing further, we'd like to ask Brother Kenneth, if you would, to dismiss us with a prayer.